Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. 0870 32 32 32 is the WhatsApp as well. We're returning to our Masters of Music series. Earlier in the year, you might have heard we had the Ilan pipes, we had the double bass and the banjo. And this morning, we're bringing you an instrument that can do ballet, trad, dreams, movies, and pop. As we meet the symbol of the state as well, it's also the symbol of a pint of stout, the harp. And she is the RT Concert Orchestra's principal harpist, Geraldine O'Doherty. Good morning.
Hi.
You're the principal harpist of, you're the Orty Concert Orchestra principal harpist and also professor of harp.
Yes, yeah.
I love that title. How does one get into the harp?
Well, my route was through my mother. She was a professional cellist in the symphony orchestra. And when she left there, she wanted to do something a bit different. There was a lot of cello and piano music, but she thought playing with harp might be really nice. So she struck up a duo with a harpist called Denise Kelly, who is a great character. And when I was 3 years old, I was brought along to all their rehearsals. So, I mean, as soon as I saw a harp, I just couldn't believe it. You know, not only it's so striking looking, but the actual
it's
sound
a beautiful
of it.
Instrument. Yeah. And you also have a massive musical clan and calibre and
there's
heritage.
A lot of us. Well, my mum, you know, was one of four sisters. They all played. And of course, they had children, who most of whom ended up playing as well. So there's quite a few of us, yeah.
She was one of four sisters. So there's a cellist, two violinists and a pianist.
That's right, yeah. And it was quite unusual. They all went to the Municipal School of Music, but then my mum and her sister Geraldine, they at 16, they got sent over to the Paris Conservatoire, which was quite an adventure at the time,
yeah.
You know, in the 50s. And they studied there and then came back and worked in the orchestras here.
And tell us about the aunts, because one of them was very important in the orchestra and was a trailblazer.
Oh, yeah. Well, my aunt Geraldine came back to lead the RTE Symphony Orchestra, and she was only 26 years old. And at that time, I mean, it was not only unusual, it was still a novelty to have women in the orchestra, but also to be leading an orchestra as, you know, a young woman in her 20s was really unusual.
Incredible.
And
she was
quite
the first
daunting.
Female leader of that orchestra.
Yeah.
And one of them, the pianist, was it, of the sisters, married a well-known tenor?
That's right. Eily was a wonderful pianist. She went to Italy to study, and then she struck up a romance with Frank Patterson, the tenor. Actually, Frank, I believe, was engaged as a tenor to sing at one of the sisters' weddings. And that's how they met, which is kind of funny. Yeah.
And he marries into this musical family. And your dad, although an architect, not musical, has a very significant role in history when it comes to...
Well, I guess so, yeah. He was involved in the design of the National Concert Hall in Earlsford Terrace. He led the team of architects for the OBW. So, and of course, it was handy because he was able to consult with his wife about the needs of musicians.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Was it the OPW that did it? Is that what? Because he was in the OPW.
That's right, yeah.
So the Office of Public Works.
That's right.
Was designing and looking after the concert hall.
Yeah, doing great things.
And that's just being done, I think, next year, isn't it? You're laughing at the OPW. Yeah, what are you getting
there? I love it. Yeah, it's a great hall.
They do very good things. It's the bad headlines that drag them down. So obviously no massive surprise when you announced to the family, I'm going to become a professional musician.
Yeah, I think it would have been more unusual if I said, actually, I'm going to work in the bank, you know.
Yeah,
it's kind of a given.
What kind of harp do you play then?
So I play a pedal harp. It's also called a concert harp. Some people would call it a double action harp. That's the technical term. And it's the harp that you'd normally see in an orchestra, or you might see it on a concert hall stage, or maybe even beside the altar at a wedding, because
do,
a lot of people
lot
like it because it looks so dramatic.
It looks amazing.
So it stands at, you know, 6 feet high. It weighs about 6 stone, so it's quite cumbersome to get around.
And I thought it would be heavier because it looks like big chunks of wood.
It does, but it's actually hollow. So the body of the harp is hollow for the sound to resonate. And then also the big pillar at the front, a lot of people would think it's just kind of structural and decorative, but it's hollow as well.
Is it?
And it contains 7 metal rods that connect these pedals down the bottom to these little discs up the top of the harp. So it's got actually 1,500 moving parts in the mechanism.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of deceptive in its appearance. It looks like a simple instrument.
It's like a helicopter of the musical instruments world with all the bits and pieces.
That's
there are rods inside. I realise that. You do think it's a structural thing to keep it up.
Yeah.
Yours is beautifully carved, by the way. That is kind of extraordinary.
Yeah, well, this is actually the orchestra harp.
Is it?
I'm sure they won't mind that I'm using it today. And it's made in Chicago. And this exact harp was designed in 1890, and they haven't changed the design since.
Oh, right.
So that's why it looks, you know, it's kind of the period.
Of the period,
but
yeah.
I brought it today because it's the harp that, the exact harp that a lot of Hollywood soundtracks would have been recorded on, you know, in those studio orchestras over in LA. That's what they, so it's a close sound to that. So that's why I like it.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Someone's already asking, is it mostly women who play the harp?
That is a really good question. In the beginning, it you know, for pedal harp, in the beginning it was mostly women, and that's largely due to actually Marie Antoinette. Marie Antoinette, she popularised it. She was a really good harpist by all accounts. And of course then, once she started playing, everyone, all the young ladies wanted to follow suit, and it became a great fashion. So it was a preserve of ladies. But then later, in the 19th century then, the harp started to be used in orchestras, and that was more a role that a man would have.
I see.
Orchestras were pretty much
the history
women.
Of that,
and then
orchestras.
It wasn't until the 1920s then that they allowed one or two women into orchestras to play harps.
Really? Well, sure, let's hear more from the harp. We're going to begin, I think, in the 18th century, aren't we? Which is when the pedal harp first comes
about. Yeah, so I think a lot of people think this type of harp would have been just, you know, a foreign import. But actually there was a guy, John Egan, an Irishman who was a blacksmith's apprentice, and he saw one of these and had a go at making one, and he became a major producer of pedal harps in Dublin. 25 Dawson Street was his studio.
I was on Dawson Street.
Yeah. So I picked a little piece that a visiting harpist, Sophia Dusek, would have played. It's a piece by her husband. And we know that she played this in a recital in around 1806 in Dublin. Anyways, it's just a little
pretty
snippet.
Much exactly how it would have sounded.
So
Dusek.
Yeah. Hey.
Summer. It's so happy.
It's cute and it's charming, and it's the kind of thing you would have heard in the salons at the time in the early 1800s, and that's the kind of thing they were playing.
No wonder they're eating so much cake in their happy lives.
Stuffing their face with cake, yeah.
The harp itself, it's a light-coloured harp you have with us, I would say, kind of an oak, light oak-coloured. What's it made of?
It's made of maple, mostly, and then the soundboard, maybe because it needs to be a bit sturdier, the soundboard is made of spruce.
Right.
And because actually the weight of the strings pulling the board is the equivalent to a ton weight, which is a lot.
They
can explode occasionally. It has happened.
They can.
Yeah. The soundboard will just pop off because there's so much tension.
Oh my God. Right.
So you wouldn't leave it sitting in the sun because the glue will.
I see. Okay. Or it keeps them away from heat sources.
Yes.
So you're kind of in a fridge most of the time.
No, naked flames.
What about the general plucking of the strings? I presume they're pretty tight and can snap at a moment's notice. That's all I'm thinking about.
They can, yeah. I had one pop last night during a concert, which was a nice surprise.
You?
Yeah. But we were playing in a tent last night in Galway. Mm. So the kind of humid conditions mean that it's kind of, you know.
I see. It was warm.
Be a bit temperamental. But I mean, the conventional way you'd play is just with the tip of your finger, the kind of fleshy part of the pad. But then, of course, you know, as it got into the 20th century, then composers started using what we call extended techniques and lots of different ways of playing. So we can do harmonics, which are nice. It's a bit like an airport announcement.
That's exactly what it is.
Ryanair, yeah. F422. And it can, you know, they would ask players to play really near the board of the harp, which kind of makes it sound a bit like a guitar, which is quite clever.
It's or very versatile.
You can kind of do this effect, a xylophone effect, by pressing the bottom of the strings. You can do a gong. You can play with the nails.
Oh, I like.
Which is
I
what
like
the
ancient Halloween one is. What did you do there? You're doing it so quickly.
Just struck the wire strings. Because the ones at the bottom are wire.
It was all doom for Donegal after 12 minutes. Bong it goes. You can also strum like a flamenco guitarist using your nails.
Yeah, you can. You go. that kind of thing. That's really, you know, cool. So they were all about the gimmicks.
I meant to ask, is it dangerous when a string goes stupidly? Presumably,
it's just loud. It gives you an awful fright sometimes.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah.
And you don't have to stop the whole thing. You
can it depends.
Oh, I see.
Well, you know, sometimes you can get by with that, and other times you'll have to stop. But it very rarely happens, really, because you check them just before.
Is there a xylophone effect as well?
Oh, yeah, the xylophone is this one where you press the base of the string and it kind of mutes it a little bit.
Oh, I see, yeah.
It's kind of an unusual effect. And then kind of whistling up the strings. And then if I change the pedals, then I can get lots of different tonalities.
Okay.
And so one of the favourite effects that composers use in the harp is the glissando, of course, which is just when you run your finger, you know, up and down the strings. But if I muck around with pedals and change them all up,
go on.
You can completely change the colour. So.
That's a nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible that glissando.
Yeah.
Is we instantly go that we know that's a dream.
Yeah. Well, that's the power of Hollywood, really. And actually, that's the sound that they use in The Wizard of Oz when the witch is, she comes up with the idea of these poppies in the field. Yeah. They're going to put them all to sleep, and she's casting that spell. That's what you hear.
You wonder what it was used before it became a Hollywood kind of nightmare thing. Obviously, we go to the 19th century. This is the heyday of the ballet, and the harp is very important here. And the Russian, who only lived till he was 53, didn't he, Tchaikovsky?
That's right.
53. And he wrote the Nutcracker, but this is a part of it.
Yeah. So the ballets were premiered in St. Petersburg, and there was an amazing virtuoso harpist there called Albert Zabel. And Tchaikovsky kind of exploited his brilliance. And I think as the Nutcracker in particular, it's quite a magical ballet, like Clara gets whisked off to the land of sweets and all that kind of stuff. So he used harp and celeste to kind of get that magical sound. Because before that, you know, it was just wind instruments and strings. So composers were quite excited to have a harp and to be able to use all those colours. So this is like a little excerpt. It's a cadenza that he wrote that Zabel played. And it's at the start of the Waltz of the Flowers. So you can imagine this is when all the ballerinas come along in their big tulle skirts and their flowery headbands.
I love the image. What is a cadenza?
Cadenza is usually when an instrument gets to take a little solo turn and show off a little bit.
So that, would you call that the harp cadenza?
You would call that the harp cadenza. And he wrote another one in Swan Lake because, of course, the harp can kind of quite easily conjure up the image of, you know, rippling water and the gracefulness of a swan.
Yeah, it illustrates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When it's used a solo. By the way, the Nutcracker, the Orchard Counts Orchestra is doing the Nutcracker, the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre in November.
Yeah.
I'm told.
Yeah. So there you go. Looking forward to that.
You obviously are a complete genius expert at this. Do you have to play? Do harpists play just one instrument all their lives? Can you move in between them?
Well, I do. Some people go from, you know, they switch all the time from playing Irish harp to concert harp. I mean, I will fess up and say I don't make the greatest sound on an Irish harp because I'm a bit too, I would tend to overpull a little bit. For me, I feel like I'm going from playing tennis to table tennis.
the difference between the concert harp and the Irish harp?
There's a little bit of difference in the technique because I think the tension is much higher in these strings. So maybe sometimes the hand position is a little bit different. Yeah. And of course, Irish harp players do all these fabulous, really fast ornaments. And they have a slightly different hand position to do that. And they're extremely skilled.
Is it smaller, the Irish harp?
Yeah, it's generally maybe about 3 foot high. So it's about half the size of this. Infinitely more portable.
Yeah, that'd be handy. Yeah. And then, I presume that's what you would have learned on a smaller harp.
I did, yeah. I started, because when I was three, a 6 foot harp would have flattened me. So this woman, Denise Kelly, really kindly lent me her own little Irish harp to get started on.
And I think that's on display, is it? That one that you...
Well, yeah,
once in
oddly
Dublin
enough,
Castle?
Because it was a really good example of an Irish harp that John Egan of 25 Dawson Street made.
Yeah.
So later the state bought it to display it as a fine example of his craftsmanship.
So it's a treasure. It's a national treasure, literally now.
Yeah, and of course I was just throwing it around the place.
If it's smaller, does it have all the notes? Is there a kind of a trick that the Irish harp has to deploy?
Well, the range of folk music would probably be a bit smaller anyway. Mm. The tune would probably stay within a range of maybe, you know, 8 notes. And so there's less need for having the very low bass notes and the very high.
They use a lever, I think, do they?
Yeah, so we have on this harp pedals, but on the Irish harp, John Egan, when he was making his Irish harps, he thought to put a lever so you
very
can
clever.
Change it by hand.
Has the effect of the pedal, does it, somewhat?
Yeah. The only disadvantage is that if you want to change key during the piece that you're playing, you have to use one hand to do it. So you can keep the tune going, but your other hand has to fly up and change these. So, but a lot of folk music would stay in the same key from beginning to end. So it's suited for that, yeah.
Okay, perfect. The film really changes everything for the harp then in this, the 20th century.
Yeah.
Not least Mr. John Williams. And the harp is actually, is there in Jaws, isn't it?
It is. It's the first thing that's heard, really. People often think of the threatening kind of double bass, but actually,
which Malachy Robinson played for us. I think we have a clip of Malachy Robinson doing the double bass. Want to do a company and demonstrate what the harp.
So this is how it starts off. It's very kind of low, rumbly glissando to kind of conjure up the image of the murky waters. You don't know what's going to emerge from.
Yes.
Was Malachy playing one?
You couldn't hear, but we could hear Malachy there. But we got the idea. It has that real sense of dread and doom.
Yeah. A clever texture to put in. Actually, if you ever see the orchestra play it, don't bother looking at the harps and basses. Look at the lead of the orchestra, because she's always doing a shark impersonation and trying to make me laugh as I'm playing this.
That's the messing that goes on. The harp, John Williams loves the harp in everything, doesn't he? It's in E.T., Harry Potter and Star Wars as well.
Yeah. So it's often used in film music as an accompanying role or providing colour and texture. But then there are a couple of cases where he actually gave the harp a little tune. He did in Angel's Ashes, he wrote a harp solo, but also in Star Wars.
So we go from the nightmare and the horror to quite romantic. The harp obviously has the romance.
Yeah, so he gave the harp solo to, it depicts the love story between Anakin Skywalker and Padme Amidala. I'm not exactly a Star Wars expert.
Star Wars one.
And George Lucas, he said about this piece, he said, "Their love is complicated, pure yet forbidden, and personal, but with profound ramifications for an entire galaxy."
Oh, yes.
And he said, "Somehow John Williams has managed to convey all of that complexity in a simple, hauntingly beautiful theme."
So it's a romance, but it features the future Darth Vader.
Yeah, but there's definitely a sadness to it.
Beautiful, but I see what you mean.
It's very sad.
It's very sad. Yeah. It's going to be very romantic, a love theme.
Yeah.
But it's doomed. It's doomed, of course. The solos appear in many soundtracks and film.
There aren't too many, but actually one of my heroes was this, she was known as the Hollywood harpist. She was called Anne Mason Stockton. And she, I won't say she's like the Cliff Richard of the harp, but she had a 7-decade career recording soundtracks.
That's
so her
good.
First soundtrack that she recorded was Gone with the Wind. And amazingly, her last was Schindler's List in 1993. So Gone with the Wind was 1939. And she recorded over 800 soundtracks, but she said her favourite was the soundtrack for the John Huston film version of The Dead.
Incredible, really. After all of that career, and this is the one she focuses in on.
Yeah, because she said she, first of all, they picked a beautiful song, The Lass of Ockram, which of course is at the seminal moment in the story. When the tenor Bartell D'Arcy is singing it and Greta's at the bottom of the stairs thinking about her former love.
And Greta is played by Angelica Houston, who is John Huston's daughter, obviously.
That's right.
And I think his son wrote the screenplay adapted from James Joyce's story.
Yeah.
It's also incredible in the life of John Huston because he's dying when he's making this film.
That's right. It was his last film. Yeah.
I think he needs an oxygen tank from his wheelchair to direct the whole thing.
Yeah.
So you've got all of that in the background for a legendary performance by Donald McCann as well.
It is probably my favourite film, actually. I think it's just extraordinary.
And you were describing this particular scene because Bartell Darcy, the tenor, is played by?
Yes, he's played by my Uncle Frank.
Your Uncle Frank Patterson.
But that's not why I loved it so
no,
much.
I know. The Lass of Ochre from the Dead, which also demonstrates that the harp just has this beautiful Irish sound as well. Now, this is the Hollywood version, really, isn't it?
It's the Hollywood version, and it's also kind of arranged in a style that is, I suppose, reflects the period at that time, the early 1900s, so kind of.
Poor Greta.
Yeah, it's another sad one, sorry.
The Lass of Ockram, which is a really stunning thing. Someone is on to us, Pauline is on to us, Geraldine. She says, I was at that concert in Galway last night. It was amazing. I could only see the harpist's hands and it was fascinating to see them move. Also, her hands look very white with the lighting. What a wonderful orchestra. Thank you for memorable. I'm worried about your hands.
It's fine. I have good circulation.
It's okay. It's fine. Very well lit. Someone said, beautiful harp playing at the 9:30 mass on Sundays in Strandhill in County Sligo. If anyone wishes to join the ceremonies, I always try and make the effort when I'm in the locality. It's a big draw if the music is good.
Yeah.
The Edward Bunting, I'm sure you'll know, was in the 18th century Irish Harp Festival in Belfast and he wrote down so many tunes which would otherwise not have survived.
That's right, yeah.
And you couldn't have a conversation with the harp without someone mentioning Turlough O'Carolan.
Of course.
One of the most famous harpists.
Our most famous harper, yeah.
Harper. Or harpist?
Well, I would call him a harper. So usually this distinction is that someone playing folk music is a harper.
Aha.
And classical music, you might refer to them as a harpist. Maybe in the same way that you would say a fiddle player or a violinist.
Ah, I see. Easy to remember.
Well, that's how I think of it.
So the Irish folk harp, Celtic harp, some of them call it, the Irish harp, they would be the harpers.
Yeah, which I think is an infinitely nicer word, actually.
It's fun.
Yeah,
harper. Feels like they're jumping with the harp. Well, we won't harp on about it. Oh, there we go. That's a terrible phrase for a beautiful instrument. There's a question already in here saying, is it used in pop music? And the answer is, yeah, very famously.
Yeah. Probably the most famous example is the Beatles' She's Leaving Home, where it's unusual because actually no one from the band plays on that track. It's just an orchestra playing.
Oh,
starts
right.
off with a harp and then you have John and Paul singing. So the other two weren't involved. So it's a really different sound. It's on the Sgt. Pepper album.
People and, know the first few bars are purely harp.
Yeah. And I think maybe, I mean, the song is about parents lamenting that their daughter has run away. And I think, you know, it maybe gets across that they are still viewing her as an innocent, you know, young girl.
Yeah.
But actually she's come into adulthood and she's independent. And so I think the harp kind of ties in with that innocent sound of, you know, young ladies playing the harp. And that's just my guess.
That's a very good guess. And the first few bars, as we say, are on the harp. But you're going to give us more of the song with just because you just have the harp.
Yeah, so why not?
Why not? Geraldine O'Doherty. Thank you. listen to a lot more of that. That's stunning. She's a magician, says this texter. Wonderful sensitivity for her beautiful instrument. Oh, and on the pop and used in famous tracks on Fairytale New York, Siobhan Sheehan played the harp.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't want me to forget. Superb on the harp this morning. So rich and informative is a thank you from Celia. And also Anne Cahill says this has been the most heavenly programme.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Feels like we all needed this. How many harps do you have, harpist Geraldine?
Oh, if I'm being really honest, I have one Irish harp made by Paddy Cafferty in Galway, and I actually have three concert harps, which is a bit embarrassing. But I always have one permanently on loan to a student.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Very good.
And that's not as many. Harper Marx had a harp in every single room, and he even had one in his bathroom. He used to play when he was on the toilet. Sorry, that's not too crude.
I suppose I can see it's possible to do.
Yeah, I mean, great use of your time.
You teach as well, then, clearly. Is it a difficult thing to be a beginner in a harp, on a harp?
I'm not really, actually. I think it's really encouraging that when you first play, it instantly sounds beautiful. Even if you've never played, you could come over here right now if you wanted.
I'll leave the professionals.
And it would sound beautiful. And then it's really nice for a teacher to listen to, because I don't know how anyone teaches beginner violin.
That's a good point.
You know, all my students sound beautiful.
Even if you try to banjax the harp, it'll still sound
good as long as it's in tune, yeah.
Now, we asked you to do also a cover, didn't we, of another song for us. On the Strings Alone. Do you particularly love this theme tune? Alan Menken wrote it in 1991, won Best Original Song at the Oscars.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, it's very popular. A lot of people, you know, brings back memories of their childhood, I suppose. So it's Beauty and the Beast.
We'll have an instrumental.
Okay.
Stay forever. That was stunning. Geraldine Doherty, thank you so much for being our master of music today on the harp. Everybody will want to hear more, so they can go see the RTE Concert Orchestra every Tuesday and Friday for the month of August.
Pretty much, yeah.
In your father designed the National Concert Hall in Dublin. That's not the reason she's there. But for now, Principal Harpist with the RTE Concert Orchestra, Professor of Harp at the Royal Irish Academy of Music, Geraldine O'Doherty, you can take a virtual bow. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Back after these.
Email oliver@rte.ie.